Well, you know what I think. I'm a Christian. I'm not going to deny that.
I do want everyone to feel comfortable. That's why I'd like to talk to you about Jesus.
Please do not go religious.
Somebody's going to hell over there.
He better not.
Even the devil will speak the truth for his own purposes.
This is war.
Accept it.
Back to Jerusalem podcast.
Yeah, I'm back and I'm armed with righteousness.
With your host, Eugene Bach.
He just seems like he's got it all figured out.
He's a righteous dude.
Yep.
Hello and welcome to another Back to Jerusalem podcast. I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, and I'm coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of Dubai. We just wrapped up our Back to Jerusalem vision trip, and if you've never been on a Back to Jerusalem vision trip, I highly encourage you to join us. This one was one for the books, really. I mean, we've done vision trips in Tibet, China, North Korea, Iraq, all over the world, but this one was special. You know, unlike other missionary organizations, and I'm not putting anyone down, I'm not comparing us in any way other than to say that when you have been on mission trips with other missionary organizations, there's some kind of understanding, right? It's understood that the mission organization is going to be a good host, they're going to take care of you, they're going to plan things for you. We're just not that organization. We're not geared towards taking tourists into other countries. With that being said, we have somebody on our staff. Her name is Belinda, and she does an amazing job making sure people feel as comfortable as possible, because really on our vision trips, anything can and often does happen. I'm usually at those Back to Jerusalem vision trips, maybe not for the whole thing, but oftentimes for part of it. And I'm not a very good host. I'll just put it that way. You know, for me, I'm going to go towards where the projects are, where the action is, and I hope that you can keep up. I don't always communicate like, hey guys, we're leaving, we're going this way. I do, but not very well. And if you don't get it, if you don't understand, if you're not there, then you get left behind. And I often tell people as well, you don't really do this in tour groups, but if you're not there on time, we leave you. My background in the U.S. military, you know, people are on time, and we've got on this vision trip, we had 30 people with us. And so I didn't want 29 people to wait around for like one person just because one person couldn't show up on time. There's been times where I took a lot of flack for it, but it's just the way we roll. So you kind of have to know this before you go on a Back to Jerusalem vision trip. But we had a Back to Jerusalem vision trip in Iraq right after the invasion of ISIS. And we had an 18-year-old with us. She actually went from 17 to 18 while on the vision trip. And she wasn't always with us on time. In fact, she was habitually late. And I kept saying, you have to be on time because we have to leave. We can't wait. We have to leave. We can't wait. We have to leave. And every time she just kind of smiled. Well, one time she was late and we left her in Iraq. And that I was totally fine with that. There were some people that had problems with that. They had issues, and they said, you know, I actually was set down by an older elderly lady that said, you know, I understand, but this is a young person. You know, we have to watch over her. And I'm like, actually, she's 18 now. And she knew what time to be there. It's happened over and over and over. And I just go on about the projects. It's why I don't really take a lot of groups with us. But I feel that it's important for a lot of Back to Jerusalem sponsors, prayer partners, to see what they're praying for, to see what they're supporting. And it's good to come onto the field because we can't take photos of a lot of things that we do. We also have to change information for a lot of the projects that we do. Why? Because it risks security. So there are trips that we take where we want to bring people that really have a connection to Back to Jerusalem. They have a real connection to the vision, and they really want to see, you know, who am I sponsoring? Who am I supporting? Who am I praying for? What environment are they in? What are the challenges that they're seeing? What are the victories and the testimonies that they're experiencing? I love for people to experience that firsthand, but you can't exactly plan for that, right? But people can't just come with you one day. There are times where I get a phone call and I need to be on a plane in the evening. So I just jump on a plane and I leave out and I go to wherever. You can't really do that with a vision trip, right? Especially when you have like 30 people, they have to plan for a time off of work. They have to save up the money. They have to get their visas. Some people don't even have passports. Maybe they've never been out of the country before. So that takes a bit more planning. However, I can't plan what's going to take place in 6 months. You know, a lot of other mission organizations, they'll do things like, you know, you can come and help us plant a field. You can come and help us dig a well. You can come and help us paint a school building, those kind of things. But sometimes those projects, not always, but sometimes those projects can actually put more stress on missionaries than not receiving anybody at all. And what we want to do is not add to the stress of our missionaries, but be a blessing to our missionaries. So what we did in this instance, we went to Cambodia. We went with our Chinese teams. So there's been some Chinese teams that have been serving there since 2011. And we did a prior podcast directly from the field as people were being prayed for, people were getting saved. It was phenomenal. We planned to do a program where we would go out to one of the villages where two of the villages actually that the Chinese had been working in and serving and preaching the gospel in. We went there, the two villages came together, and we had a time of ministry, and it turned into a time of prayer, which we were not expecting. And about 80% of the village gave their heart to Christ. This is a place that is 98% unreached. So it was great to be in an unreached nation, in an unreached area, together with the Chinese Back to Jerusalem missionaries, preaching the gospel, praying for the sick, and seeing people come to Christ. Phenomenal. Right after that, we did a business as mission meeting in Vietnam. Now, our business as mission meetings always look a little bit different depending on where we do it and who we do it with. This time, we had about 250 people in Vietnam at our business as mission training, mainly more than 9/10 were Vietnamese. Vietnamese Christian business owners. And wow, were they ever business owners? I mean, some of them came in with some pretty amazing resumes. We had publishers there. We had company CEOs there. We had lawyers there. We had individuals that owned huge production factories. We had individuals that owned smaller service companies. Just all across the board, Christians that are in the growing environment of Vietnam, the Vietnamese economy. If you haven't been to Vietnam, right now, Vietnam is booming. Now, I'm in the city of Dubai right now, and there's a booming that has definitely been taking place in Vietnam in Dubai. If you come here, you're going to hit the wow factor, right? You're going to see these massive skyscrapers. You're going to go out and see luxury at its finest. You can go to some amazing hotels, great beaches. Almost every restaurant that you can think of is here in Dubai. So it has a bit of a sparkle. It is something that if you come as a foreigner, you feel that, oh, I've seen the future. The future is in Dubai. But if you've stayed here, if you live here, you will quickly understand that there's an undercurrent of poverty here. And I'm not just talking about rich versus poor. I'm talking about even the wealthiest buildings are actually a little bit of a facade. There's a lot of fake activity taking place here. A lot of these skyscrapers that are out here in Dubai are filled from top to bottom with empty offices. You see, if you ever do business in Dubai, one of the things that you'll realize is that in order to register your company has to have an office. And that office has to be this a size big enough for the number of people that you're going to employ. It doesn't matter what you do. So if you do production, for instance, and you need to have 1,000 employees, you need to have an office space that would fit those 1,000 employees. And so what a lot of people do is they pay, like us, our own organization. So I've started a few companies here. And what you have to do is you have to pay for office space for how many ever visas you have for those that come and serve. And I've been to those office spaces that you're forced to pay for by the government. I've been in these buildings, which are basically empty shells that have absolutely no workers. I'm talking floor after floor after floor, office building after office building after office building. The office that we have our office in a couple different buildings. And you can go to those office buildings, and go and see your office. You'll have a beautiful lobby. Oftentimes we did. We got a beautiful lobby. You walk in, there's a door guard. There's a lobby attendant. You know, you go and you go to the elevator and then you go to your floor. We have one floor. It's on like the 30th floor. You go up to the 30th floor. It's empty. You're walking around a hallway with office names on the door, and all of the doors are glass so you can see into the offices. I walk into our office. Our office, we have two different types of office. We have one that's a full office, which is just us in the office. And we have another office where we actually share space with other people. In the office that is our office, as well as the shared space office, neither one of those locations have any people. The entire floor is empty. I go to another floor, it's empty. I go to another floor, it's empty. It's a facade. It's fake, which is what you don't get in Vietnam. There you have real hustle and bustle. Is it as pretty as Dubai? No. Is it as sparkly as Dubai? No. You don't have the restaurant selection. You don't have the beautiful skyscrapers. You don't have the waterfront sparkling buildings that reach up and grab the clouds. And yet you have real business, real economy that is building and building fast. And so there's an energy there and you feel it with the people and you feel it with the business owners who are Christian that came to our Business as Mission conference. It was exciting, absolutely exciting. So if you ever get a chance to join us on our Business as Mission, our Business as Mission meeting or our vision trips, I would highly encourage it. We will do it again next year. We usually do our Business as Mission in the spring of every year. So keep out a look on our website. We would love to have you come and join us. We do the Business as Mission for three main types of people. Those that have a business and want to know how they can use it for mission. Those that have a business and they want to grow it into mission areas, meaning that maybe they have a business in America or Europe and they want to build up their business in Asia, Africa, or the Middle East. We can help connect you with massive suppliers and partners to help you grow your business in other countries. And oftentimes, this is extremely advantageous for you and your company to grow, not just in impact in areas that haven't heard the gospel, but also in profit margins. And so we want to help people that already have a business that want to know how to use it for mission. We want to help people that have a business and they want to grow it in the mission field. They want to expand their reach. Or three, entrepreneurs who don't yet have a business, but they want advice on how to start one. Now, I'm writing a book right now. It's a Business as Mission book. That will be out in the fall of this year. That Business as Mission book will be available at our next Business as Mission conference. That is exclusively with B2J, where we share things that nobody else has ever shared before. Now, that is about our vision trip as well as our Business as Mission. But the podcast that I want to do today is something that it goes against the current feeling in the West. This podcast is going to contradict the current feeling in the West because what we are seeing, especially right now in the U.S., is the U.S. congressional body, in this case, the House of Representatives, just passed a bill to ban TikTok in America. Now, it's got to go through the Senate. I don't know if it's going to pass the Senate or not. By the time you hear this podcast, I don't know if it will actually have gone through the Senate or not. But this is important for Christians to hear because it's very easy to jump on a very dangerous bandwagon when it comes to TikTok. If you're not familiar with TikTok, I guarantee you your children are. Your children are familiar with TikTok. It's one of the fastest growing social media platforms in the world. It is basically a social media site that's made up of short videos, and the company has really been able to develop an algorithm that has been super popular with younger people, and it's about to get more popular with younger people. We're going to if this bill to ban TikTok in America passes with the Senate, we might see an explosion in the popularity of TikTok. TikTok, the challenge with TikTok is that TikTok's parent company is ByteDance. ByteDance is a Chinese company that is basically very closely integrated with the Chinese Communist Party. If it wasn't, they wouldn't be allowed to exist. That's just a fact. What makes that dangerous is that TikTok in the last couple of years has become the major news source and social media platform for most children between the ages of 10 and 30. So that age range is not an easy one to get. And their influence has been phenomenal and measurable. We've already seen other countries become just as alarmed as the U.S. Other countries around the world have even flat out banned TikTok. So, for instance, India has banned TikTok because in 2020, especially during the pandemic, they saw that China's control of the narrative of what was taking place during the pandemic was dangerous. So India banned TikTok. Taiwan, obviously. Taiwan is worried about an invasion from China. They have banned TikTok because they know that it's influencing their people. But we've also seen a ban from U.S. militaries and government offices. So it's already been banned among government offices in the EU, in the UK, in Australia, in Canada, and the U.S. So TikTok as an application has been banned on phones that are carried by military members and government officials. Especially anybody dealing with national security at all, TikTok is banned. So that's already taken place. What hasn't taken place is younger users, independent users, using TikTok to communicate with one another. And there was a recent study that was showing that users between the ages of 15 and 25 get their primary news source from TikTok. And TikTok owned by China means that their influence. Now, I know that there were some congressional hearings where the CEO and the director of TikTok had to sit in front of Congress and answer some questions, but that you have to understand that there was a verbal dance taking place. Answers that were given were not answers to questions that were asked. And that happens at all of these hearings, right? There is a little bit of verbiage that is played with a little bit of liberty that is taken so that you don't really have to give the answer that you don't want to give, even though the question was one that you don't want to answer. Does that make sense? Like the congressional members are asking questions that they know the answers to, but they want it on record to a direct answer to their direct question. But the person being questioned knows this, and so they give an indirect answer to a direct question. And they do this over and over and over until basically you get frustrated individuals on both sides. It's a game. And nobody can play that game better than China. And so the Chinese representatives came and said, listen, we do not pose a national security threat. Our servers are not based in China. But when they were asked over and over again, but are you not owned by ByteDance? Yes. Is ByteDance obligated to fight on behalf of the CCP? That's where you get the indirect answers and a little bit of dance. So listen. Listen to me clearly when I say this, because I don't want this to be misconstrued, misunderstood whatsoever. I've been saying this for a very long time, longer than anybody in Congress has. That I can guarantee you. I've been saying for a very long time, TikTok is dangerous. I've been saying that. I have said, don't put TikTok on your phone. I don't have TikTok on my phone now. Because it has been used to gather information. That information is being used as warfare. That information can easily track all of the users, how they travel, where they travel, where they're going to, who they meet with, what are their habits for purchasing materials, what is their habits for consuming news. All of this information is used against the user. It's also used for marketing, sales, these kind of things. But it can be used, and I believe it probably has. I have no proof of that, but I know China. And I've been working together with the Chinese Underground House Church for more than 20 years, and I know how information is used against people. So let me put that out there and start off this conversation by saying that the U.S. congressional members are correct when they say that TikTok is dangerous to national security. That is a fact. And what we just saw is a congressional hearing unlike any other thing that we've seen in a while. That is because we have bipartisanship on this vote. The United States Congress just yesterday voted overwhelmingly to approve a bill that would ban the Chinese control of TikTok app from operating in the United States. And that bill passed in the House 352-65. That is the most bipartisan bill that I have seen in a long time. Right now, the United States is absolutely ripped in the center by partisanship. The Democrats versus the Republicans, the conservatives versus the liberals, the Christians versus those that want to attack Christians is in full swing right now. And we have not seen bipartisanship in the House for the last probably 10 years. Both the Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, and the former Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, one's a Republican, one's a Democrat, they both supported the bill. This bill that they just passed is similar to what Donald Trump tried to pass in 2020 through an executive order. And many people around the world, including Christians, are celebrating this measure. But I'm telling you, it's not good news. Banning TikTok from a congressional act is not good news. The reason why is because we've seen this type of thing take place over and over. In fact, one of my friends from the Hackers Conference sent me a post by Tulsi Gabbard. Now, Tulsi Gabbard is not a Republican. She's a Democrat. She was a Democratic congresswoman from Hawaii. And she ran for president, actually, on the Democratic ticket. So I think it's fair to say that me and Tulsi don't agree with a lot of things, but on this we do. Tulsi put on X, the former tweet or Twitter platform. She put this: the TikTok ban is not about TikTok. Don't be fooled. It's about politicians having the power to decide what thoughts, ideas, and information Americans are allowed to hear and see. It is about freedom. It's about destroying our democracy in the name of protecting it. Will we, the American people, willingly give up our freedom in the name of safety? Benjamin Franklin says, those who give up essential liberty to purchase a temporary safety deserve neither liberty nor safety. Tulsi, I could not agree with you more, because that is something that the Chinese push all the time, that they take away freedoms of religion. They take away freedoms of choice. They take away freedoms of speech. Why? To protect you. If you were a Chinese citizen, they do it to protect the nation of China. They do it to protect national harmony. Whenever freedoms have to be given up for safety, this should be the hardest loop, the hardest hoop to ever jump through. Now, it's a little bit laughable. China's foreign minister came out and they responded to the congressional vote on TikTok by saying this. I'm going to read directly with what he said. He said, quote, in recent years, though the U.S. has never found any evidence of TikTok posing a threat to the U.S. national security, it has never stopped going after TikTok. Such practice of resorting to hegemonic moves when one could not succeed in fair competition disrupts the normal operation of business, undermines the confidence of national investors in the investment environment, sabotages the normal economic and trade order around the world, and will eventually backfire on the U.S. itself. That's a joke, all right? That is an, seriously, China, if anybody's going to lecture the U.S. on doing censorship, it sure the heck isn't you. You are a joke. When you look, if you travel to China at any time and you try to use your computer without a VPN and without a foreign data plan to get onto YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Gmail, a Google search engine, a Yahoo search engine, almost any sort of search engine or social media site that is not owned by China is banned in China. And the reasons that you give most of the time are absolute zilch, zero, nada, nothing. So please, don't go lecturing the world on what you feel is fair and not fair, because it's an absolute joke. But you're going to use it to your advantage. I get it. Kudos. You're going to launch a warfare, and when people try to stop it, you're going to do everything that you can to use their laws against them. I get it. Wouldn't stand in China for 5 seconds. So let's not talk about how things are going to backfire, because that is a joke. However, even though I don't agree with China, even though I don't agree with TikTok being able to have access to all this information, I am cautioning Christians around the world from getting on the bandwagon and cheering for the shutdown and the cutoff of TikTok in America. This is one of the reasons why we at Back to Jerusalem set up Ding Dash. Because in 2020, when the U.S. elections were going sideways and there was cheating in the U.S. elections, and even though during COVID time, there was a lot of misinformation that was being pushed and a lot of real information that was being suppressed, anybody that went against those guidelines, anybody that said anything about the elections being rigged was cut off of social media. Anybody that said anything against the main narrative for COVID was cut out of social media. Because of that, we quickly at Back to Jerusalem saw how this was a very dangerous area for Christians. Because when Christians begin to share information about homosexual marriage, about abortion, transitioning, about biblical ideas that go against world values or biblical values that go against world ideas, we quickly saw a digital persecution on the horizon, and we put together Ding Dash, which is a platform for free speech. And you can come on there and cuss God out on Ding Dash. You can come on there and say anything you want about anybody at any time on Ding Dash. It's absolute freedom of speech. As a user on Ding Dash, however, you can block people. There are people that said things that I didn't like, said things against me. I blocked them, never had to see them again. I didn't have to send a warning to anybody saying that, hey, this person did this and it's bad. Can you please remove their account from Ding Dash? I didn't do that. You have the right as a user to see what you want and not what you don't. The same is on Twitter, the same is on YouTube, the same is on Facebook. But during those times, we saw that they wanted to control the flow of information. And that is dangerous. Whenever you have somebody that says, I know what's good for you, I know what's right, I know what's wrong, we're going to lean on the experts. We're going to go with what the experts say. Guys, if COVID taught us anything, it's that the experts are full of crap. It's not that experts are full of crap. It's that those who get qualified as experts and those who get qualified as kooks is full of crap. We saw it during the days of the gulags with Russia. Individuals that were telling the truth often got suppressed got thrown. You know that there were people, there were doctors, there were scientists, there were people that sounded the alarms, that actually gave information that the rest of the world wanted to know and many Russians wanted to know. And what the Russian government would do is just say that this person is mentally insane, would put them on drugs and put them in a padded room, which is basically being, you know, put in prison, but better than being put in prison. Because see, if you put somebody in prison, you make them a martyr. But if you say that they're out of step with reality, they're hallucinating, they've gone cuckoo, they actually need to be on mental stabilizers and drugs, then it's easier for people to accept their absence from the conversation. Does that make sense? Where people that don't agree with what is being said, what everybody is saying, what the national news is saying, what the national leaders are saying, what the national scientists are saying. If somebody says anything different than that, they can be labeled as insane, cuckoo, wacko, put on drugs, and forcefully put in padded rooms. That's basically what Facebook was doing. That's basically what Google was doing. That's basically what mainstream media was doing. They were taking individuals that were speaking out against the mainstream kind of agenda, the narrative, and they were ostracized. They were put into digital insane asylums. They're wacko. They're cuckoo. I mean, probably the most famous of all of those took place with a guy by the name of Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, for those of you that don't know him, is probably one of the most famous podcast people in the world today, has the number one listened to podcast. He made a deal back in the day before 2020 to sign on with Spotify, and he got a bunch of money from Spotify. So that took him off of YouTube and some other platforms because Spotify wanted exclusive rights to him. Now, Spotify, for those of you that don't know, is not based in America, and thank God for that. They're actually based in Sweden. So when Joe Rogan began to talk about COVID virus and treatment for the COVID virus, he brought on different professionals. Now, the professionals, or quote unquote, the experts that didn't agree with other experts, there were people that were absolutely irate that Joe Rogan was giving them a platform, giving them a voice. Joe Rogan was giving everybody a platform, including those that were spouting the mainstream narrative. He was bringing on doctors and scientists and virologists that were speaking the mainstream narrative, and he challenged it. And then he brought on people that were professionals, experts, scientists that challenged the mainstream narrative, and he challenged them as well. But the powers that be, U.S. government officials, media moguls, individuals that were invested in Pfizer and big drug companies, absolutely wanted to control the narrative and squash and destroy anybody that disagreed with him. But something interesting happened, and that is Joe Rogan got COVID. And when he got COVID, he took ivermectin. And then he went on his podcast and even did a YouTube video and talked about how it helped him and how he suffered almost no symptoms. And he just wanted to give it from his point of view. His doctor prescribed it. The medicine that he took was given to him by his doctor. So it wasn't that he watched some conservative, wacko, tin hat TV channel and decided to take it. He did it with the advice of his doctor. And he monitored it, and he filmed it, and he documented it, and he shared it with his audience. And the world went berserk. And in fact, CNN, this is documented. They put a filter on his face and showed him green and gray, like he was coming out of a grave and looked dead. They took the video that he put up and absolutely lied about it. Joe Rogan brought the doctor from CNN onto his podcast and just tore into him. You can listen to that. One of the things about Joe Rogan's podcast is it's long form, kind of like this podcast. He'll go 2.5-3 hours depending on the subject, the matter, and the person that is interviewing. My point is, that is information that basically everybody that was against, what did they say? Everybody that didn't want that information out there, what did they say? Individuals that had the mainstream narrative and didn't want anything to go against the mainstream narrative, what did they say? The same thing that they're saying about TikTok. This is about your safety. We're trying to keep you safe. It is dangerous. Yes, we need to have freedom of speech, but in this instance, it's life or death, don't you see? This isn't about free speech anymore. This is about keeping people alive. We know the real truth, and we can't let this fake information to go into the mainstream because it will trick people. It will hurt people. Don't you understand? People will die. You need to listen to exactly what we're saying or people will die. You can't argue with what we're saying because people will die. We have the experts on this. This is not an opinion. This is fact. People will die. And what happens? We, as fearful individuals, look up and want somebody else to provide our protection. We look up and we want them to look out for our safety. We believe they have our best interests at heart, and maybe they do. But that is too much power to give to anybody. C.S. Lewis one time put it this way, which I think is one of the best ways to put it. He said that there's nobody more dangerous than somebody who takes away your rights for your own good. Because they never sleep. Their punishment never stops. Their hardship that they add to your life has no rest. Because they do it for your good. At least an evil person, you have the chance of them relaxing because they run out of energy. Maybe they stop because they feel guilty. But a person who believes that they do it for your own good, they have passion, they have energy, and they can go to sleep at night with a clean conscience. That's dangerous. Because when they don't know, and they themselves have been tricked, and they have the passion in that ignorance to take away your rights, to take away your dignity, to take away your freedom of choice, to take away not only your freedom of choice, but you don't even have the information to make a choice. That is dangerous. I've seen it for generations inside of China, where information is stopped. You think YouTube is stopped because they said, yeah, there's too many good things happening on YouTube. We don't want you to see those good things. That's not how they sell it in China. They say that it's bad for the society. It's bad for national security. It's bad for social harmony. So they have to stop it for the good of their people. Because if they don't stop YouTube, people will die. Individuals will suffer. They have to stop Christianity from being preached in China. Because it's a matter of national security. Missionaries work for foreign governments. They infiltrate the nation. They control the minds of the people. Religion is the opiate of the masses. It's for your good. It's for the good of the people. It's for the good of society. In fact, people that died in China, that were killed in the gulags, were killed because it was the good of society. What happens when you can't stop somebody from saying something that you think is dangerous? What happens when somebody says that it is okay to take certain medications to protect yourself against COVID, but the mainstream narrative is that there's nothing except for this Pfizer shot? What happens? What happens when stopping their internet service does not work? Didn't work with Joe Rogan. I mean, the mobs came out against Spotify. They demanded that Spotify deplatform him. They demanded that Spotify take down those episodes. Spotify didn't take him down. They didn't deplatform Joe Rogan. They stood up and they said that he has an opinion. We believe in freedom of speech. He has that freedom to speak. What we saw there is something that allowed freedom of speech to continue on. But what happens when somebody can't be stopped? Like a Christian preaching the gospel. You take away their platform, they still preach. You stop them from going out into public, they still preach. You put them in prison, they still preach. People are still getting saved even in the prison cell. Even when you put them in solitary confinement, still their message is going out. How do you stop them? That was the same thing that the communists had to go through in the 1950s and 60s and 70s in China, Cuba, North Korea, Russia, Ethiopia. What did the communists do? What do the Muslims do when they can't shut you up? They kill you. Taking that life is justified. Why? Because the message that you're sharing is dangerous. The lies that you're spreading are deadly. People will die. That's the argument. Today, you might agree with the banning of TikTok, but that step is a dangerous one. Once you go down that road, you might agree with it today, but what happens when you don't agree with it tomorrow? Either you have to believe in certain freedoms or you don't. The things that you agree with don't need protection. Freedom of speech on speech that everybody agrees with does not need protection. It's the speech that nobody agrees with. In fact, they find it dangerous. In fact, they find it deadly. That's the speech that deserves protection. That's the speech that you have to fight for. I served with some amazing guys in the military. There are protesters that have protested against them. And I've heard many of them say, I don't agree with your speech, but I will die in order to protect it. This banning of TikTok, I have to stand on the side of Tulsi Gabbard. Freedom of speech is nothing that should be given up lightly. And Christians, in this instance, need to take a long, hard look at the banning of TikTok and ask themselves, is this really something to give up our rights for? It's a question for all Christians to ask themselves. I want to thank you so much for joining us for another Back to Jerusalem podcast. Again, I'm Eugene Bach, your host for this time, coming to you live on delay from somewhere within the borders of Dubai. God bless.